KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS False Pass.
Hello and welcome to Line One, Your Health Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Jillian Woodruff. Cancer touches nearly every family in America, and here in Alaska, where geography, cost, and access create even steeper barriers, the burden can feel especially isolating. 1 in 2 men and 1 in 3 women in the U.S. will be diagnosed with cancer in their lifetime. But what many people don't know is that the American Cancer Society does far more than fund research. In fact, in communities across our state, they provide free lodging during treatment, rides to chemotherapy appointments, help navigating care, and advocate for health policies that save lives. Today, we're diving deep into what the work of the American Cancer Society really looks like in Alaska, who it helps, how it's done, and why it matters. I'm joined by two incredible women who are deeply embedded in this mission. Charissa Habegger is the director of the American Cancer Society Alaska and has worked with the organization for over a decade. Her career in cancer philanthropy spans nearly 20 years in multiple countries, but she's chosen to focus her energy here on addressing Alaska's unique challenges and helping build community-powered solutions. And Jonna Beach is a longtime American Cancer Society volunteer and Cancer Action Network volunteer and advocate from Kenai, a caregiver and community leader, and even a champion pie baker. Jonna helped lead the Smoke-Free Alaska campaign and has built relationships with lawmakers to ensure Alaskan voices are heard in policy decisions that affect cancer prevention and care. Together, we'll explore the human side of cancer care, prevention, and policy, and how you can be a part of the solution. Charissa and Jonna, welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you both. If this conversation brings up a question or a personal story, you also are welcome to join our conversation. Have you or someone you love faced a cancer diagnosis and felt unsure where to turn for support? Beyond your medical provider, did you know there are volunteers and professionals working behind the scenes in Alaska to help people through their cancer journey? Call us toll-free statewide at 1-888-353-5752, 1-888-353-5752, in Anchorage at 907-550-8433, or email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. Charissa, let's start with you. I've known you for many, many years now. I think you brought up since I moved here a decade ago.
Yep, same here.
And really loving being involved with the American Cancer Society. So I want to hear more about you and your journey, your work in cancer philanthropy.
Yeah.
Tell us about it. What drew you into this work?
Oh, well, you know, I started in this field in my home country of Canada almost 20 years ago now, and I did not have a connection to the cause at that time. But in my first week on the job in Edmonton, Alberta, I met an osteosarcoma patient, a bone cancer patient who was in the 12th grade that I will never forget, and that affected the rest of my life. And she had just finished her surgery and was starting chemotherapy as an inpatient. And I went up to meet with her because I heard there's this grade 12 girl who wants to raise money to help other kids the way her high school classmates did. They raised money for her prosthetic leg.
Wow.
She had her leg amputated above the knee. Her name was Brittany Taylor. And she was so tired from chemo. She was laying in her hospital bed. She couldn't open her eyes. She said, "I promise I can hear you. I just can't. I'm just too tired to open my eyes, but I want to let you know I want to raise money to help other kids fund their prosthetics the way my classmates did for me." And my life was forever changed that day. And I thought if this girl, this 17-year-old girl could raise funds for other kids facing cancer, like, this is what I want to commit my life to. And I should share with you that Brittany is now an ICU nurse. We're still to this day, almost 20 years later. And she sits down next to every single person who has to get an amputation to let them know, like, this is what you're going to experience, but this is what it's like on the other side. And so it's just one of those sweet moments that just changed the course of my life, and I can't imagine doing any other work.
Those experiences are so powerful, and they do stay with you forever. What drew you to Alaska?
You know, Alaska, well, first of all, I'm here because my husband's born and raised Alaskan, and so that's what brought me to the state. But Alaska is just a really, really hard and often lonely place to have cancer. We have so many barriers to screening and care here. Obviously, our geography is a significant part of that. We also have a very transient community here, too. Mm-hmm. So it's just, it's a challenging place to have cancer. And I think all the more important why our work in the state matters and why our volunteers that support us in that work matter.
I don't think I've ever thought about that with cancer being lonely and more so here than it is other places. Because we think about all of the, you know, support groups and that people would be a part of support groups. But when you're so kind of isolated, mm-hmm. even though, you know, we're in a state, but we're so isolated from the rest of our country, even, I'm sure that brings some unique challenges.
Certainly. Mm-hmm. And thank goodness for technology and yes. digital connectivity. No. That is one amazing thing that is helpful in our state. But it is lonely because there are a lot of Alaskans who do not have family here and do not want to be a burden on their friends.
Yes, I can imagine that. And I'm sure, you know, friends, even we want to help and step in, but it's fairly difficult in all situations to kind of ask for help. And especially when you don't know when the need will end, too, which
right.
makes it difficult. Well, I'm sure many people have heard of the American Cancer Society, whether they've been involved in a fundraiser or walk or just seen the name attached to research. But beyond that broad recognition, what is the American Cancer Society really? And what's something important that you think people may not realize that you're doing?
Well, what you said is exactly true. The American Cancer Society is known for cancer research. We are the second largest funder of cancer research in the U.S. next to the federal government. One of the, I think, things we do in our state that we offer with the most real-time impact is direct patient services. And I think that that's something that not a lot of people think about or know about when they hear the American Cancer Society. But here in Alaska, as I mentioned earlier, there are so many barriers to receiving screening and care. And so we're here to help Alaskan cancer patients get to and through their life-saving cancer treatment. So things like transportation. So if you cannot drive yourself to treatment, if you're too sick to drive and you don't have others to drive you, we have a volunteer driver program called Road to Recovery, where patients can use an app like an Uber and have a volunteer driver pick them up to get to treatment and back. And then obviously in Alaska, with 80% of our state not on the road system, flights are required for a lot of patients to get to their treatment. And so we also have a flight partner program where we can provide free flights to patients who need to travel to receive their treatment. And that could be rural Alaskans going to Anchorage or Soldotna or Fairbanks or Juneau for treatment. Or it could be Alaskans who have to go out of state to the lower 48 for specialized treatment. We cover those flights. And then, of course, with flights comes the need for lodging. And we're thankful to have hotel partners in the state, such as JL Hospitality Management, that offer reduced rate lodging in state for cancer patients through that contact us. And then we also have Hope Lodges in the lower 48. Think of it as like a Ronald McDonald House for cancer patients. So it's a free place to stay in a supportive environment for cancer patients who have to travel out of state to receive their treatment. And Alaskans utilize almost 500 nights annually of stays at our Hope Lodges in the lower 48 when they're there to receive specialized care. And all of those things can be accessed through our 24/7 helpline. And in addition to those things on our helpline, we also have nurse navigators on the other end when Alaskan cancer patients and caregivers have a question about a recent diagnosis, and trained counselors as well who can offer emotional support. So all of those things are resources to Alaskan cancer patients and caregivers. And I don't think everybody knows that. So I'm happy to be able to share that today.
Yes, not at all. And we'll have to make sure that we share that number with others on the website. The 24/7 helpline with the nurse navigators, I was not aware of that. And I think a patient of mine brought that up because they received a diagnosis now that we have that policy where you share results mm-hmm. immediately without going through your provider. Well, now people are getting diagnoses and not understanding them at all when they're seeing these biopsy results, which it's difficult for me to understand some of those biopsy results, but they're receiving that Friday night. There's no one for them to call. And a patient just told me that they spoke with a nurse online or on the phone that explained to them, this is what it typically means, and these are usually the next steps. And so they just felt, you know, had so much more clarity going through the weekend with that information. But it's, I mean, that would be a very, very scary thing to hear or to see and not really understand and not know where to go.
Yeah. So, yeah. And it's certainly, it's not a, you know, not a substitute for talking to your provider, but it's something where on a holiday, you know, Christmas Day, you could call. And if you are afraid of something or nervous about something and have a question, you can call and get an answer. And so that number is 1-800-227-2345.
Oh, that's an easy number. Thank you. Thank you for that. Well, Jonna, you started out as an American Cancer Society volunteer in 2009, you shared with me, and then your journey unfolded from there. So can you share your path with us?
Sure. So I did start via Relay for Life on the Kenai in 2009, and slowly made my way through the committee roles and then became event lead in, like, I don't know, 2010, 2011. And filled that role for 10-ish years. And in 2013, Emily Neenan, who is our grassroots manager for ACS-CAN, American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network, which is the advocacy side of the American Cancer Society, reached out and gave me the opportunity to go to Juneau to advocate for smoke-free workplaces in the state of Alaska. And so that's when I added the ACS-CAN volunteer hat. And in 2014, I became state lead ambassador. So it was a state lead volunteer for ACS-CAN. We love acronyms, by the way. So if we throw something out there that you're not familiar with, let us know and we'll try to explain it. And then in 2020, I wasn't going to cry, but it's going to cry. Oh, it's going to cry. I'm going to cry. Okay. I can do this.
It's okay.
Yes. So in the fall of 19, so the day after Thanksgiving, my mom, who lived out Funny River, I live on the Kenai, and she was like, you need to call me. And I was like, oof, what is she doing now? Right? She's always into something. And we had canceled Thanksgiving as a family because she wasn't feeling that great. She'd gone to the hospital for stomach flu. Oh. And I had a large community event that I was hosting the day after Thanksgiving. And then that Saturday morning rolled around and she texted me. She's like, you need to call me. And I was like, oh, what did I do now? Because even though I'm a grown woman, she still is my mother. And so I gave her a call and they had found a tumor. And they said they think it's cancer. And she, you know, kind of like left it at that. And I drove out there. I called my brother and I said, if this is as bad as I think it is, I'm going to need you. My brother lives in Phoenix. I'm from lower 48. And so drove out to my mom's house and looked at it in black and white. And it was stage 4 pancreatic cancer. Mm. And so anybody that knows anything, that's a bad diagnosis, right? And mastitized to her liver. The reason that we found it is where her tumor was, it was constricting her bile duct. And so it was causing her to not be able to drain the bile, which was making her throw up. Sick. And that was mirroring the stomach flu. And she didn't want to tell me because she didn't want to ruin my community event, as, you know, mothers like always like to do, right? So we ended up going back to the emergency room that day because she still wasn't getting any relief. And when I walked in and the nurses looked at me and they said, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. And to have that reaction from the ER nurses was like, oh, this is bad, right? By the grace of God, whatever I did in my life, doors opened to be able to get my mom in the next week for surgery up in Anchorage with one of the two doctors that can actually go in, open that bile duct, and biopsy the tumor. We signed up for chemo. She did one round. She was pretty fragile going into it because she'd been losing weight and they couldn't figure out why. Shocker, it's cancer. Mm. And so she only chose to do one round of treatment and then passed away on March 2nd. So from diagnosis to death, it was 90 days.
Wow. Oh, I'm so sorry.
So that was when I rolled from volunteer to caregiver. Yes. And before that happened,
I carried people's stories, right? I was the one that I told everybody else's story. And I believe in the Cancer Society so much because I, this is what I'm feeling even 5 years later. This, I don't want anybody else to feel, right? It sucks. It's just, there's no real words to describe it other than it sucks. And I believe in the mission of the Cancer Society because they treat all cancers, all ages, all genders, all everything. It's all encompassing. There's not one cancer that's specialized over another. And I personally want to put the Cancer Society out of business by finding a cure.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I kind of stepped back a little bit from my roles to grieve, and now I'm at the point now where I'm able to, I'd say talk about it a little bit better, but here I'm crying on live radio. And so that's kind of how I've walked through my roles with the Cancer Society. In December of 2020, I was asked to be on the advisory board for the state of Alaska for the American Cancer Society. And so I've been serving in that role for the last 4 years also. But it's pretty much however Emily, Sharissa, and our national team can use me, I'm here for it. So long story bearable.
Yes. Yes. No, thank you for sharing that really personal story. Both of your stories really touch me and resonate with me. I don't know if any of you, either of you know, but my father was on the board of the American Cancer Society in Pittsburgh. So I grew up volunteering with the American Cancer Society. It was a big part of our life. And then the reason that I wanted to become a doctor was because of watching the St. Jude's Cancer Research Hospital. And actually, there was a story about an osteosarcoma, a kid with osteosarcoma, doing quite well after receiving their life-saving treatments. And that's what led me to want to be a doctor. I wanted to be a pediatric oncologist, but then, you know, things change. But also in my family, there's several members on my mother's side with pancreatic cancer. And so I know that is, all cancer is devastating. Even cancer that is highly curable is just a devastating, you know, diagnosis to get. It's traumatic, you know. And it's hard to have hope when you have cancer diagnoses that have, you know, may not yet have cures or have very low cure rates. That's devastating. That's traumatic. And that's really hard to share with people that you love, too, because you do want to have hope. And if you're having people say, I'm sorry, and, you know, it just really brings you down, you know. So your work is so important, both of you. Thank you for sharing that with us. And I want to dig in a little bit more because you did bring up, you know, the disparities that are here in Alaska. And also just the disparities of the diagnoses. And can you tell us, like, are you noticing that there are higher incidence of certain cancers here within Alaska or within our Alaska Native population?
I'll defer to Sharissa.
I think I'll start with that. Alaska is one of the few states where cancer continues to be the leading cause of death since 1993. So this year, 3,700 approximately Alaskans will be diagnosed with cancer. It's a significant number of people. So we do have a lot of work to do here in our state when cancer is eclipsing that of heart disease in terms of the leading cause of death. You mentioned Alaska Native people. The American Cancer Society puts out an annual report called Cancer Facts and Figures. It's one of the most widely cited cancer publications worldwide. And we did a few years ago in a special section of that report, statistics between Alaska Native people and American Indian people were separated for the very first time. And what that showed was that the cancer disparity among Alaska Native people specifically is incredibly alarming. With one type of cancer, colorectal cancer in particular, Alaska Native people and colorectal cancer is the single greatest cancer disparity that the American Cancer Society reports on. Alaska Native people have the, and colorectal cancer is the most significant cancer disparity worldwide. So I think that separating that data told us that we have more work to do. I think the good thing that that did was it put eyes on the cancer disparity among Alaska Native people, not only in our state, but nationally as well. That certainly lit a fire in our board when that happened. And so I just want listeners to know that we see that cancer disparity, and we are working to address it. We're collectively working to stand up an Alaska Native Cancer Fund to find more answers into why that disparity is what it is. And so we're actively working in funding that space. So, but it is an alarming cancer disparity, the most significant one that we have on the planet. And so we have to look at it more closely.
And so when you're working in this space, is this that you're increasing funds to go towards research to figuring out why this disparity exists and how to get rid of it?
Yes. Yeah, so we're working to build an Alaska Native Cancer Fund to provide funding for the projects that could lead us to more answers. There are a lot of unfunded ideas right now. And so we want to work to ensure there's some funding that is specific to Alaska Native focused cancer research. And so we're working towards that right now in Alaska and looking for funders here and outside of the state as well to build that up for these investigators.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Well, you also talked, so there's the research side, and then there's the transportation and housing and trying to relieve some of the financial stress that's on patients and their families. Are American Cancer Society resources available to anyone facing cancer? Are they primarily intended for specific groups, like people living in remote areas or people with lower incomes?
So American Cancer Society programs and services are available to all cancer patients, regardless of circumstance, regardless of income level, regardless of geographical location. So anybody can access those, like free transportation, lodging, and emotional support services by calling our 1-800 number or going to cancer.org or walking through the doors of our office here in Anchorage. It's certainly accessible to everybody because we know that everybody needs support.
Yes. Thank you. Well, thank you for sharing these powerful insights and this human side of cancer care. We do need to take our first break, and we're going to come back and talk more. You're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection. If you have a question or comment for our guests today, give us a call statewide at 1-888-353-5752 or in Anchorage at 907-550-8433. After this short break, we will continue our discussion of bridging the gaps in cancer care with the American Cancer Society guests Sharissa Habiger and Jonna Beach as Line One continues statewide.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line One on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you responsible for a growing team of healthcare workers? Now's the time to invest in your team. When you enroll by June 30th, the Alaska Primary Care Association will cover the full cost of training and apprenticeship programs to help your employees get certified, advance their skills, and stay within your organization. Visit alaskahealthcarecareers.com to learn more. This message sponsored by the Alaska Primary Care Association.
Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Dr. Jillian Woodruff. Today, we're exploring the local impact of the American Cancer Society and how it's doing far more than funding research. I'm joined by guest Sharissa Habiger, who is the director of the American Cancer Society Alaska, and Jonna Beach, a community activist and advocate for American Cancer Society and the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. If something we've said today resonates with you, we invite you to join the conversation. When was the last time you or your loved one had a cancer screening? And did you face any obstacles trying to get it? Call us toll-free statewide at 1-888-353-5752, in Anchorage at 907-550-8433, or email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. One thing that I did want to ask you about earlier was becoming a volunteer, and how do you mobilize and engage volunteers across this state, and what needs do you have in terms of needing people to help with this mission?
It's a great question, and I'm so glad you asked. I think that when most people think about the American Cancer Society, they think about this huge organization. But in reality is there are 6 staff in the state of Alaska. Oh. And so we are incredibly, we say volunteer-led, staff-supported. We're incredibly dependent on our volunteers in the state of Alaska, like mm-hmm. Jonna, for everything. Earlier I talked about our volunteer driver program called Road to Recovery. Those are volunteers driving patients to and from treatment every day. And then we also have some incredible cancer survivor to peer mentorship programs. So if you're someone who has survived cancer and you want to give back to be matched with a newly diagnosed patient to become a peer mentor, there's needs for that too. In addition to our volunteers who are advocating with Jonna in Juneau and in DC, and our volunteers who help put on all of our special events that you hear about and see in the community. So there's a significant need for volunteers. And so we hope that people find us and, yes. and let us know that they're interested in volunteering through our website, cancer.org. There's an Alaska page, but also there's a lot of word of mouth. We do we do lean into our current volunteers to recruit others as well so that we have enough volunteers to fulfill our program needs.
For sure. I'm just going to piggyback real quick. The one thing is there's a place for everyone in regards to the American Cancer Society and Cancer Action Network. And it doesn't necessarily have to be, Shirsa and I were talking about this morning, it doesn't necessarily have to be fundraising or calling policymakers. You could write letters to, your local newspaper, or you can drive somebody to and from their treatment. And so if you feel a call to be involved, call us. Because we'll sit down, we'll have a conversation with you, and we'll figure out where you're comfortable and how to best use your talents. Because it's definitely an organization that I'm in love with, and I want everybody to be in this love bubble.
Jonna, what if somebody wants to volunteer with you and your work in advocacy on the political side, but they don't have any political experience? Who are you looking for to help with these policy changes?
Any and everyone. And one of the things that the word political is a little bit like a word. Cringy word, yes. I refer to it as policy work. Mm-hmm. We are nonpartisan and we work the policy. And I say policy work in the sense of we bring human stories to a piece of paper. And that's why, I used to carry people's stories. I still carry people's stories. And so if somebody wants to get involved, reach out to us. Emily Neenan's in Anchorage. I'm on the Kenai. We've got volunteers in Fairbanks, in Mat-Su. We're all over the state and down in Juneau. And so it just starts with a conversation, a cup of coffee, and again, kind of how do you want to help out and where can we put you?
So everyone can get involved in some way.
Absolutely, yes. And the same 1-800 number, 1-800-227-2345 is who you can call to share, like, I want to get involved, and we'll contact you.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I want to get into cancer screening because that is another big topic. And, as a physician, I know cancer screening guidelines are always evolving based on new research, based on more effective, efficient screening modalities. Can either of you speak about how American Cancer Society stays up to date with these changes and how you help the public make sense of the screening guidelines?
Yeah, the best place to stay up to date and get the latest cancer screening guidelines is through our website, cancer.org. And we even actually have a new tool called Cancer Risk 360, where you can go online and you can type in some information about yourself, and it will let you know what are your cancer risks, and also like what screenings are you due for, are you of age for, and would be recommended. So that's a wonderful tool. But the American Cancer Society does its own research and modeling and work to put out cancer screening recommendations and guidelines. And of course, as we continue to learn more, those can evolve and change over time. So I think the most important thing is to be looking at those electronic digital websites to see what cancer screenings are you due for right now.
Okay. So the American Cancer Society comes out with its own screening guidelines. So how do you make sense of it when there are other national governing bodies that have conflicting recommendations for screening?
Yeah, so if thinking about entities like USPSTF, mm-hmm. right, that have their own screening recommendations and guidelines, a lot of the American Cancer Society's guidelines do mirror those of USPSTF, but not always. Mm-hmm. And so we do our own modeling, and we take great care in doing the work to make adjustments to cancer screening recommendations. So we've done that, for example, with African American men and prostate cancer. A lot of work, a lot of time, modeling, bringing work groups together from across the country and across the world to make sure that we have all the right data in place to make a change to those recommendations. And so often, like ACS recently changed their lung cancer screening guidelines to be closer to those of USPSTF. And so there's a lot of work that goes into that because there's a lot of implications to those recommendations. So after the Affordable Cares Act, insurances needs to cover preventative screening recommendations that USPSTF puts out. And at the state level, oftentimes insurance needs to cover recommendations that the American Cancer Society puts out. So we take great care in those screening recommendation and changes as well.
Do you ever liaison or speak to other governing bodies about their recommendations if you disagree? Like here you had talked about insurance needing to cover certain screening recommendations that you have, but if the screening guidelines may differ from what you've come up with, and because you're focused on cancer care, is there policy that you try to affect with other people that are putting out their guidelines?
I know at the national level, there's certainly good two-way communication between our cancer screening staff and our colleagues in government. Mm-hmm. Those conversations certainly happen. Yeah,
that's a difficult road to travel when you're trying to affect any change, really.
Right.
But especially one that, like you said, has many implications, not just at the patient level, but a financial level too. Mm-hmm. What are the most urgent messages that ACS is sharing right now around cancer prevention or screening?
I think the biggest and most important message is that cancer screening is cancer prevention. So when you know the different screenings that you should be getting based on your age, your gender, and you do those things, and then also vaccination as well, like HPV vaccination would be considered cancer prevention. And the best type of screening is the one that gets done. So there are often,
yes,
a lot of different,
mm-hmm,
options, right, for screenings. And so the best screening is the one that gets done when you have a choice. But just keep in mind that cancer screening is cancer prevention. There are a number of cancers that are preventable.
100%.
And I'm sure there are barriers to getting screening, especially for in this state where people may not live near large medical centers. So how does the American Cancer Society help to on that prevention level before people have any diagnosis?
Yeah, I think just education, right, on cancer, the importance of cancer prevention and screening, and then just ensuring that Alaskans know that cancer screening is accessible in a lot of different ways. I'm thinking about the mobile mammography,
yes,
unit. John, I know you have a great story of from the Kenai with respect to a cancer diagnosis that came from that.
So one of my dear friends on the Kenai, she and a group of her girlfriends in the fall of... Let's see, what year are we in right now? The year of, so this would have been the fall of 23. She and her girlfriends got together and they went to a local healthcare clinic, free clinic type thing held at Central Peninsula Hospital. And they had the mobile mammography and blood work and all that jazz. And they just did it together, like, oh, how fun would this be? Until it became not fun. And she received a cancer diagnosis. Mm. Thankfully, they caught it early. She had it removed, then went through radiation, and then was given the all clear in 6 months. So in 6 months from her diagnosis to the all clear. Like, just because she and her girlfriends got together and thought it would be quote unquote fun.
Yeah.
And so that saved her life. And the thing about her story is she had lost her husband to cancer 2 years prior to that, a year and a half prior to that. And so she was coming off of being a caregiver and thick in her grief. And they just did this thing for kind of entertainment purposes, right? Life's real exciting on the Kenai in the wintertime. And then they caught it early, and she's still here with us today. She actually just passed her 1 year of all clear. And we all know in the world of cancer is when you hit that 5 years, it's like a big deal, right? Mm-hmm. So the fact that she has 1 year under her belt, she was one of the gals that I went to Cabo with recently, and just getting to celebrate her and what she was able to accomplish because she went to one of these things and she chose to do it. Typically, that's not something that they do. They don't, you know, they don't, they know better, but they don't get their screenings because of the way that their healthcare is outlined. I know another thing that we worked with on the ACS CAN side of things, this has been a handful of years now, but there was a loophole with Medicare patients where you go in for your preventative colonoscopy, right? But if they find a polyp, they remove it because it makes sense. They're already there. Might as well just get it out of there. And but it changes the procedure diagnosis code from preventative to surgical. So it changed their benefits from preventative, which under the ACA, Affordable Care Act, is considered covered at 100%, to now they had a surgical procedure. So they would wake up to a deductible of $300, $500, whatever their benefit plan was. So our elderly were not going in for their cancer screenings because they didn't want to potentially wake up to a financial burden. So through the work with the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network, we are able to legislatively close that loophole so that our seniors can go and get their cancer screenings and not have to worry about that financial burden.
So it would still be classified as a diagnostic preventative procedure? Preventative, I guess.
It was regardless of the outcome of it, the intent going in was a preventative. And so it didn't just flip that switch and change their benefits.
That's amazing how that change can make such a huge impact.
Huge impact, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, even screening sometimes is just anxiety provoking, you know, whether you've had cancer touch you or you just have anxiety around medical procedures and in situations. So, you know, that party may have saved, you know, her life that she, because maybe she wouldn't have gone at that exact time.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? And she, being surrounded by friends, that's, you need support.
Yeah, and they were there with her through her entire treatment and doctor visits. And, you know, the river tower at CPH was rocking when they came through because it was like, it was a party.
It was a party.
It was a party.
What kind of other issues are you seeing even on the Kenai for people who are diagnosed or even getting screening?
Again, I carry stories, right? Another one, and this is a very recent story, is a community member. She's young. She's in her 30s. Became pregnant. Got on Denali Kid Care to carry through her pregnancy. And then Denali Kid Care stays on for the adult for the first year and then the baby, as long as they qualify. Found a lump. They said, we're going to go ahead and watch this. And when she was about 6 months pregnant, the lump had... it was an aggressive form of cancer. Charissa knows the word of it, but it ended up being stage 4. And so she went from just being a normal pregnant person to being a cancer patient and trying to figure out how to navigate what's best for herself, what's best for her baby. She has 3 other children. And just kind of was floundering. And thankfully, she was on Denali Kid Care. And so she was able to get the treatment that she got. She went outside to a facility in Seattle and got a treatment plan, came home. She gave birth to that beautiful baby boy in the late part of April. And I haven't heard anything lately, which no news is good news. I'm under the assumption that she went ahead and started her cancer treatment and that kind of stuff. So had her life not worked out the way that it did, had she not gotten pregnant, not gotten on Denali Kid Care, they might not have caught it at all, right? And so, you know, there's these other ways of these cancer screenings, cancer prevention, cancer treatment. It all just so commingles, and it's just, we want people to get screened, we want people to pay attention, we want people to go early. And if that doesn't work out that way, there's still the rest of it, right?
Right.
The treatment side of things and that kind of that kind of stuff. So,
well, I want to hear more about your policy work on the ground. So, tell us about the Medicaid cuts, because you were talking about getting people insured and making sure they have access to the prevention and screening. So, with these Medicaid cuts recently proposed in the House, how would these changes affect cancer patients here in Alaska?
Big time. And I'm not usually a numbers person because, again, I carry stories and I talk about real people. But as we were driving over from the airport this morning, I was looking at the Alaska numbers for Medicaid. And I want to gently remind the listening audience that Medicaid does include Denali Care, Denali Kid Care. So of the 232,000 Alaskans, so about a fourth of Alaskans, are on Medicaid in some capacity. 91,000 of those are children.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a big number.
That is the largest user group in the stats that I'm looking at. That is the largest user group of our Alaska Medicaid program. So to say that how would these cuts affect, it would dramatically affect Alaskans. It would affect their ability to access care. It would affect their ability to get care if they got a diagnosis. Of the 232,000, 5,600 have a history of cancer. And they, based on projections, it looks like 650 new cancer diagnoses are anticipated this year within that group. So, you know, everybody agrees waste and fraud is not a good thing. However, we can't throw the baby out with the bathwater, and it will affect Alaskans. And I'll leave it there.
Yes. Well, we do have to take another break, but I do want to ask you more about your work when we come back.
Sure.
But first, let's take another short break for the stations down the line. If you have a question or comment for our guests today, give us a call statewide at 1-888-353-5752 or in Anchorage at 907-550-8433. We'll continue our discussion on evidence-based public policies to reduce the burdens that come alongside a cancer diagnosis when we return. You're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line One on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Don't wait 24 hours to report a missing person. As soon as you suspect someone is missing, call your local law enforcement or 911 to make a report. Be ready to provide as much descriptive information as possible to help locate your friend, family member, or loved one. Your reporting can make all the difference, and maybe even save a life. Learn more about Alaska's Village Public Safety Officers at vpso.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Village Public Safety Officer Program.
Welcome back to Line One. I'm your host, Dr. Jillian Woodruff. Our guests today are Sharissa Habegger, Director of the American Cancer Society Alaska, and Jonna Beach, longtime American Cancer Society volunteer and American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network volunteer. You can also join our conversation. Has cancer touched your life and left you wondering how to give back or get involved? Have you or a loved one ever finished cancer treatment and felt unsure of what comes next? Call us toll-free statewide at 1-888-353-5752, in Anchorage at 907-550-8433, or email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. And speaking of emails, we did receive a couple emails, and this one is just piggybacking off of what we were just talking about. Leah wants to know how potential Medicaid cuts affect Alaskans' access to cancer screening and support. So you were basically, you know, talking about that and how many people are insured, how many children are insured with Medicaid. And so with not having Medicaid, if we're going to be cutting, then they may not have that access to screening. So what are you doing about this?
What are we doing about this? So this is one of the biggest things that we do with policy work is we take our stories to our policymakers. And so what I'm always a big fan of education. So you can go to ACS CAN's website, which is fightcancer.org, and click on the link there that references the Medicaid cuts. And it talks in big numbers, but we Alaskans tend to want to drill it down to Alaska. So again, just a gentle reminder that 232,000 Alaskans are on Medicaid, and of those, 91,500 are children. So that's Denali Kid Care, and I think that people tend to forget that connection because we do refer to Denali Kid Care as Denali Kid Care and not Medicaid, but that is a Medicaid program. And there was another gal child on the Kenai a handful of years ago. She was diagnosed with cancer. I want to say it was leukemia. I'm not 100% certain. When she was 5 years old, she was getting ready to go to kindergarten, wasn't feeling that great. Next thing you know, they have a cancer diagnosis and they are in the thick of getting treatments and that type of stuff. The family did not have traditional health care. She was on Denali Kid Care. And because of that Denali Kid Care safety net, she was able to get the treatment that she needed. There was a little bit of a hiccup with her care where she quote unquote lost coverage. And I contacted Charissa and Emily and they called their people and it was just a little paperwork thing. We got that corrected. And so she was able to move forward and she's a happy and healthy little girl now. And so their programs are needed. Medicaid is needed. Again, we don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. And so just be very gentle with these Medicaid cuts. If you go on fightcancer.org, click on that link, and you feel so passionate about it, you're able to reach out to our senators, Murkowski and Sullivan. The House passed the bill, and it's now over in the Senate. The Senate is looking to do changes and possibly going in for a vote, I want to say, in the latter part of June. So now is the time to either call, write a letter, email your legislator. And we're specifically looking at Sullivan and Murkowski because this is a federal level as opposed to the state level.
So you want your voices to be heard.
Please.
Not just when you're going to vote, but we yes. need to make sure things change. Everything, yes. you know, things evolve. And so we just want to make sure that we're being heard.
Yes.
What are some of the upcoming policy initiatives that ACS CAN is watching or preparing for?
So the biggest thing right now is the Medicaid cuts. In a normal year, and I use air quotes, in a normal year, we're always focusing on cancer research funding. As Sarissa mentioned in her opening comments, the American Cancer Society is the second funder of cancer research only to the U.S. government. So if you, the visual that I like to think of is if you're looking at a stack of paperwork, and the cure for cancer is in the middle of that paperwork, but you only have enough funding to get get a third of the way through that paperwork, and you just barely miss that research paper because mm-hmm. you don't have enough funding, right? So that's why funding is so important. So funding of NIH and other entities such as that. So we're always big on cancer research funding, always big on access to care. We want people to be able to get the care that they need. We want them to get the screenings and just be able to move forward through life without a cancer diagnosis or get it early.
Well, there is another email that came in from Larry that mentions the women's run coming up and the men's run coming up. And so there are so many events that yes. come up where you can get involved without being in the trenches, I guess, at the American Cancer Society, but you can all play a role, if even for a day, to bring in money. So can you tell us about some of the American Cancer Society sponsored events and what you're looking for?
Yeah, well, so the Run for Women is coming up really quick. The American Cancer Society is a grant recipient from the Alaska Run for Women. We're so grateful for that. So I will be there. Please come say hi to me. I'll be running the five miler as well. But the American Cancer Society has, we host our own events, about 15 a year throughout mm-hmm. the state. And believe it or not, those events are the primary fundraisers for the American Cancer Society's work in the state of Alaska. So they're incredibly important. And we volunteer-led, staff-supported, right? So we're entirely dependent on volunteers, not only to sit on the planning committees, but also just to be there day of at the events. And so you can definitely follow the American Cancer Society Alaska Facebook page to see what's coming up, as well as our local website as well on cancer.org. But we're so grateful for not only those who come out and volunteer at the events and help us plan them, but also participate in them and sponsor them. It takes all of us, right? To be able to put those events on, and they are the primary way we raise funds here in the state of Alaska, and they have excellent return on investment for us here.
Well, the gala is my favorite event to attend and support, and the food is amazing. So that is one where you don't have to get out and exercise. There is something for everyone.
There is, for sure, for sure. There's, I know in our area, on the Kenai alone, we start off January 1 with doing the polar bear plunge, which I've done a handful of times. I haven't done it since I lost my mom, but that's always an interesting way to really raise money for the American Cancer Society, is dunking yourself in Seward Harbor in the middle of winter. Then we roll into, on the Kenai, we roll into Hooked on a Cure, which is a fishing tournament. Then we have our own local strenuous race. I can't say that
correctly.
Thank you. I'm like, oh my gosh. It's called Brewery to Bathroom. It's a 0.5K. The Race for the Rest of Us. So that was birthed by Alana Martin. She's one of my longtime volunteers on the Cancer Society Relay for Life when we had it in Kenai. And she's not, her husband's an Ironman race dude finisher, and she's the Sherpa. She's a supporter. And so she created this race, and it's literally half of a quarter of a mile. And we start off at Kenai River Brewing. We go to Sedona Creek Park and we come back, and there's donut holes and hydration stations with, you know, juice and Doritos, and there's couches and demotivation signs. And if you don't want to come out and spend 15 minutes doing that, there's also a couch to couch option where you don't even have to leave your home. last year we hosted a Haha for Tatas. It was a comedy night. And then we have the Solstice Ski event on December 21st. We get out and we light the trail with Luminaria in honor or memory of those that we've lost. And again, if you don't want to come out and be active, there's a ski bunny option. You can give us your money and stay home. So that's
the thing.
There's an option for everyone, yes. So
sounds like there's a lot going on the Kenai.
Yeah, and that's on the Kenai. That's not even referencing Anchorage, Matsu, or Fairbanks, or even Juneau.
Wow. Yeah. That sounds like a wonderful event.
It's wonderful, yeah.
Come on
next,
down.
Yeah, next up for us, we have the Relay for Life of the State of Alaska is in Fairbanks next weekend. So that's another one that's coming up really quickly, too. It's a 24-hour walk relay around the track. And so really, and Fairbanks has the best weather for that. Mm-hmm. So it's a really good one.
That sounds great.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, we have another email. This is a person that was diagnosed with prostate cancer and is having a treatment that may be a little less traditional. And they are looking for a provider, and I guess cannot find a provider here that will offer those treatments. Are there services within the American Cancer Society to help people find? Because we do not have, you know, everything, or even when we do, we don't have the access to specialists, because they may be very, very full. Their panels may be full. So is there something that will help people to find resources outside of the state or even within the state that we just may not know are here?
Yeah, I recommend calling our 1-800 number, 1-800-227-2345. Those cancer information specialists can provide you with the information that is available and just options and providers that are available. But I also recommend the American Cancer Society ACTS website, Access to Clinical Trials and Support site. So that's an AI-powered website where you can go, if you're interested in exploring clinical trials, you can go and put in your information and learn about what clinical trials are happening throughout the state, what you would be eligible for or qualify for, then actually talk with the cancer information specialist about how to get signed up, how to enroll, what's next. So I definitely recommend ACTS website as well.
Oh, I think that's going to give this person a lot of good information. One of the other questions was about standard of care treatment versus non-standard of care, but not way off base treatment, but non-standard treatments with peer-reviewed embedded clinical evidence. And so there are a lot of people that are maybe reaching beyond the traditional treatment borders and wanting to do something that's been well studied but not really adopted into the standards, which I'm sure probably has more of a financial burden as well, as far as if it's covered or not.
Yeah, that's true. And some of those things might very well not be covered if they're still being explored. But there are a lot of different studies out there, right? And I would include clinical trials in this category. And so I think doing your research and talking to the healthcare providers that are around you about what your options are is a right place to start, as well as utilizing services like the American Cancer Society ACTS website.
Mm-hmm. And we'll make sure to share that on the website too. We have a caller that has some further questions about the Medicaid cuts. Susan from Anchorage, welcome to Line 1.
I'm Susan. I was curious, you brought up the Medicaid cuts, and I was wondering how this might actually affect our economy in Alaska if those cuts go through, thinking about kind of the holistic view.
That's a great question in regards to let me ask you a little bit. When you say affect our economy, meaning hardships for people personally, or help me out with that a little bit more?
Individuals and also our state as a whole with the cost of Medicaid and the reimbursements, et cetera.
Susan, I think that I'm happy to share that right now the University of Alaska is doing research currently on the economic impact of Medicaid cuts. And so I know that there will be, I think the information you're looking for, that we're all looking for, is forthcoming. Mm-hmm. So I do want to share with you that research is happening now right here with the University of Alaska study.
Yeah, that's a really good question. Because I imagine they want to make the cuts because they think it will improve the economic situation here in Alaska. But, you know, everything we do, there's going to be a good side and a bad side to it, right? And so, and then we have to figure out its benefits and risks. It's the same thing with medications. There are great benefits and there's also great risks. And which outweighs the other is what we have to figure out. And I guess that's what you're figuring out, Jonna, and the lawmakers, right? Above my pay grade. Also, even bringing treatment to remote areas. Of course, we need money to bring these treatments to these remote areas or to bring them here to Alaska. With this research, I think the research that UAA is doing is really going to help us here in Alaska. I think many of these cuts have been made other places already. And so I'm sure we're looking at that to see what effect that's had outside of here.
Yep. Yeah, there have been Medicaid cuts in other states as well. And so I'm really curious to see what this research shakes out by U of A. And so I'm waiting with you, Susan, for those results. And then we'll stay tuned and make sure that those are shared.
Our situation here is just really unique.
Very much so.
Well, that is the end of our program. We never get through everything that we want to talk about, but I think you've both shared such incredible information with us, and I know I feel motivated to volunteer, and I'm sure other people do feel motivated as well. So thank you to you both, Sharissa Habegger and Jonna Beach, for being with us today. Thanks to our audio engineer, Chris Hyde, and our producer, Madeline Rose. You can find more information on this and previous programs on our website at alaskapublic.org. Let us know your thoughts or suggestions by emailing us at line1@alaskapublic.org. This has been Line 1, Your Health Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Jillian Woodruff. Thank you.
Line 1 is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Learn more about Line 1 and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.
You are listening to 830 AM KSDP in Sandpoint, Alaska.
KSDP 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint. K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in False Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
It's time now for your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset, starting with your coastal water forecast, courtesy of the National Weather Service of Anchorage, Alaska. From Sitkanap to Castle Cape, today northeast winds 20 knots in the morning, becoming variable 10, seas 4 feet. Tonight, west winds 15 knots, seas 2 feet. And Thursday, west winds 15 knots, seas 3 feet. Castle Cape to Cape Tolstoy,